to the lost souls, the disintegrated spirits, the wanderers, the dreamers, and the seekers. Welcome to the Embodied Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Danielle McGinnis. Our work in this podcast will be to foster healing, transformation, self-expression, creativity, and the development of consciousness. So with our intentions grounded firmly, let's settle in and do some integration work.
Hey friends, happy Thursday and welcome back to another episode of the Embodied Podcast. If you are loving what you're hearing on the show, I would really appreciate it if you went over to iTunes and dropped a 5-star rating or a written review and just let me know what you are loving about the show, what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of. You can also always send me a DM on Instagram. That is actually how this show in particular is being put together. So I had an individual message me and let me know that they were loving the show, but they would love to hear more from my perspective about codependency. So I wanted to dive right in and tackle codependency from the perspective that not only an experiential perspective, but the perspective of depth psychology too. So when I first dabbled in the realm of codependency, it was because I myself was struggling in a codependent experience. And at that time, I was listening to a lot of Mark Groves' podcast. By the way, Mark Groves is going to be on the Embodied Podcast in July, so stay tuned for that. And he was speaking a lot on codependency, and he mentioned the book Codependent No More. And so I read that book, and it really was a game changer in the way that I was experiencing myself in that relationship. So the author of that book is Melody Beattie. But there are things in my experience over time that I have picked up along the way, different ways of looking at codependency that I would love to unpack during this show. So the first thing I want to start out with is defining codependency. So the author, Melody Beattie, defines codependency as one who has let another person's behavior affect him or her, or who is obsessed with controlling that person's behavior. She also gives a definition from Robert Subbie's book, Codependency, as an emotional, psychological, and behavioral condition that develops as a result of an individual's prolonged exposure to and practice of a set of oppressive rules which prevent the open expression of feeling, as well as a direct discussion of personal as well as interpersonal problems. So the ways that people can define codependency based on their behaviors could include behaviors like being attracted to very dependent, needy, and emotionally unavailable people, feeling as if they must be in a relation with someone, anyone, at any period of time, trying to control other people's behaviors, especially those close to you, feeling as if you are incapable of ending a relationship that you know is not good for you or you're not happy in, and then trying to please everyone else and never taking time for themselves or even forgetting that they need to take care of themselves. And so what I am going to attempt to do is unpack this from not just a relational and behavioral perspective that is often discussed in this space, but try to take a depth psychological perspective to this and see what's the archetypal energy that's kind of beneath the surface of all this. And I just want to put out there that codependency is very, very entrenched in a lot of different attitudes and values and experiences and perceptions and misperceptions and habits. And so listening to a podcast or a prescription by someone about codependency is not going to touch it. So I believe from the the perspective and the methodologies I use is that if you have a relational conflict and that has caused rupture in your soma and psyche, that requires a relational healing. And so you have to learn to differentiate yourself from others and feel safe in the context of doing so. You have to learn what it's like to say no and say that that doesn't necessarily work for me, and hold that experience of shame that often comes up for a codependent, hold that somatically and learn how to regulate your system in those states. And oftentimes that's only done in the context of safe other. I did a lot of my work on codependency alone at first by reading books, listening to podcasts, but it really wasn't until I got into a safe relationship and then a safe therapeutic container that I was able to really, really, really start to get to the roots of what was happening there. So what we need to do here is get to this, what's at the root of this, which I think is a slow, deep mourning process for the parts of ourselves and the early loss of love and support that we did not receive. And oftentimes this chronic caretaking and rescuing is just misplaced energy within the developmental system. And so oftentimes it's through our painful grieving process that it is that catalyzation of a healing process. So where I want to start here is that sometimes, I would say most of the time, in codependent spaces, we get into, I'm going to try to speak from my experience here. So we get into narcissistic patterns of believing that the world is going to fall apart if we do not caretake or give ourselves completely to others. And in our culture, it is celebrated to take care of others and be in service to others. And this can be disguised as altruism, like we have done something very good in being a martyr to others. But this can have deeply wounded roots. Because I do want to parse apart narcissism here, because each and every one of us has a certain stage of narcissism as we are growing and developing. It's completely normal in our early stages of ego development to have certain levels of narcissism. But for codependents, oftentimes ego maturity has really been suspended in a period of time that keeps us stuck in this very childlike state. And so we don't want to acknowledge that beneath this type of suspended development in narcissism actually lies a lot of pain, a lot of grief, a lot of anger, a lot of instinctual emotional energy that was repressed during childhood. So oftentimes, the expectation of many individuals who had to grow up way too soon is that they had to be the relational nurturers who endlessly give themselves to others. So these individuals are typically a little bit more sensitive because the ego structure and boundaries were not necessarily nurtured, and often these people are actually really truly concerned with others, but we need to parse apart the discernment between self and other here. We need to recognize that there is a form, as this carries on unconsciously in adult life, typically there's forms of emotional manipulation that may be occurring under the surface that is actually to get needs met. So overgiving and over-serving others is actually a very learned response. Like, we don't come out of the womb doing that. We're actually supposed to be receiving that. So typically in very early childhood onwards, people who struggle with codependency almost always grow up with a family member who demanded perpetual emotional care. So this type of parent or caregiver had no capacity or emotional maturity to be a parent who imposes that parent was the person who imposed this implicit demand upon others, and it made the child believe that the parent needed them to sustain themselves. And this often ends up being a situation where the child is not mirrored for his or her individual quirks and brilliance, but for only mirrored to the ways in which they had to offer service to others and caretake for others. And so as a result, these individuals can grow up really starving for love and affection, and oftentimes find it when they're completely enmeshed with other people. And so because these individuals were not mirrored in their individual development and in their own gifts, oftentimes the egos of these individuals, including myself in that period of time in my life where I was working with this, was very weak and unstable. So as the process of individuation begins in adulthood or midlife, this person begins to confront trauma that stood in the way of their individuality unfolding. And stepping into who they authentically are can be very terrifying because that had never been mirrored to them before. And it can feel sometimes like a black hole of, when they ask, who am I? It can feel like a never-ending black hole. And what this can cause us to do, because that can be very somatically overwhelming and triggering, we can regress to these childlike states of enmeshment, and it ends up being like a parent-child dynamic often happening. And so I want to move a little bit outside just the personal lens, because if we stay just in that like personal relational lens, yes, it's very important. But if we stay there, typically we kind of get caught in these archetypal patterns. And it's important because if we always think that the problem is with the people that we are in relationship to, we might miss the root underneath it. So it's always in that realm of other. So like the dynamic with other is always broken, when often we need to figure out, well, what archetype is playing itself out here within us? And so if we look at the archetypal dimension, as I mentioned above, it's often this parent-child dynamic where typically in childhood, the power lies in the hands of the parent. And oftentimes the child is needing that parent. And so with codependency, it's very confusing because it's almost like the parent and the child roles of care have been reversed. So the child is actually caring for the adult instead of the adult caring for the child. And so if the adult has the archetypal power principle, and the child is the caretaker, now the child is serving the power structure outside of themselves. And so oftentimes this child, and then the adult that this child eventually becomes, often grows up feeling no sense of personal power internally. And because this disempowered child is stuck in a parental power complex, this individual is going to seek situations and relationships in which this archetype is going to play itself out. So parent and child. So powerful parent, disempowered child. And so those are the situations and relationships that will often play themselves out. So we can see it in relational dynamics, but you can also see it in people endlessly serving this patriarchal model that doesn't offer space for individuality and individual fulfillment or mirroring of the truth of the individual to come to fruition. And oftentimes this person becomes a little bit of a shapeshifter and becomes whatever culture wants them to become to receive a sense of validation and love. And oftentimes it's because there is no safety in the truth of who you are. And so we participate in situations that bring us right back into being a disempowered child. And then we project the image of the almighty powerful parent onto everything, onto our jobs, our relationships, everything. So if all archetypes lie on the spectrum, I feel like this one resembles a victim hero spectrum. So on one end lies the hero, and on the other end lies the victim. And so we need to realize that every person has a little bit of both of those archetypes. But from codependents, and from my experience of being a codependent in the past, if this unconscious pattern is left to play itself out without any consciousness, we're likely to swing between periods of feeling very heroic in our service and caretaking of others when we are being validated for that. But then when we're not, we quickly swing back into being a victim. And so then the codependent feels very stuck, helpless, resentful, and trapped based on other people or things outside of themselves. And so my suggestion or my thought here is that, from my experience, that the codependent needs to activate the inner hero to help their inner victim out of that situation. So instead of this individual's inner hero serving people outside of themselves that they had to when they were a child, they need a hero to help themselves out of that situation. So the hero is the archetypal energy that helps create ego strength. And the ego is the place where boundaries exist. And boundaries are a massive part of codependency because boundaries communicate where I start and you, where I stop and you begin. And they help communicate, they help you communicate with the world around you and inform you on how to stay safe. And so oftentimes those who struggle with codependency struggle with boundaries because there was an enmeshment between parent and child. And so this could mean struggling from physical boundaries, meaning from a nervous system perspective, where does the safety of my space and the world around me start and stop? How close does someone have to literally come to me physically until I start to notice an activation within my system? So boundaries definitely have this physical and emotional component. So when our inner world can be protected, so that disempowered child can be protected from being manipulated and abused from power structures outside of themselves via the hero creating boundaries, that leads to ego strength, we have enough capacity in that place to not get stuck in limiting beliefs and toxic thinking patterns that lead us to that one-sided thinking that is very, very common in codependency, meaning that no one will love me if I do not serve them fully and completely. So that's very one-sided. If you have this internal hero supporting you and creating ego strength, you know that you have internal resources. You know that you're not too weak and too fragile to handle triggering situations. You can avoid placing unrealistic expectations on others in life and believe that it's their job to take the pain away. And this is what is really important in codependency, is removing that projection from others. You start to say no to yourself, to seeing other people through this disempowered child's eyes and seeing them as the human being that they are. And if you do not do this, this causes you to chronically and constantly seek people and behaviors and substances that give you an illusion of comfort and assurance. And then you believe that you need those things to feel okay about yourself and about your life. So if you have ego strength and you work on your boundaries, you can start to notice when someone or something is activating your body's stress response and your activation. So the thing is with these codependent wounds is that when we live out this kind of chronic service of the power principle, that's traumatic for our system, and that can rupture your protective barriers, and it can compromise the boundaries that you should have created during childhood, and you start to lose the sense of where you are and where the world begins. And so trauma can have an impact on the way that you relate to the world. You can have a poor perception of your boundaries. You can have a poor perception of other people's boundaries, and people can totally come into your space. So the way that you hold your boundaries is pretty porous. And then we can also alternate between having too rigid boundaries and having too lax boundaries. This type of trauma can cause us to be hypersensitive to someone coming and going. It can disorient us. It can mess up how we relate to the world. We can go into chronic freeze responses. We can be flooded by emotions, kind of black out, dissociate. And then that makes us really vulnerable to more trauma through situations and relationships that reinforce this. And so to begin to work with boundaries somatically, we have to normalize and validate the rupture of that boundary-making process. So just because you violate someone else's boundaries doesn't imply that you've done something wrong. This is often the unconscious belief of a codependent, is that there's something wrong with me. There's a lot of shame there when you're imposing on someone else's boundaries. And often this is only information that you need to know yourself and someone else more deeply. So that's what boundaries really communicate. It's where I stop and you begin. And so we have to start to work from your edges here. So start where your boundaries are intact and build from that place. So where in your life do you have non-negotiables? Where in your life do you have no's? Where in your life do you have a solid sense of self? And then the closer we get to the place in which the boundary was ruptured, so in that kind of parent-child dynamic, the more highly activated your system will probably be. So if you're processing trauma that impacted a boundary violation, it can be very activating for someone to talk about that relationship, to navigate that space. So if that's you, give yourself grace in that process and realize that if you're unpacking a relational container that often mirrors the child-parent dynamic, it's a replay of that, it's going to be probably very vulnerable and sensitive for you. So grace in that process. And oftentimes in these places where our unconscious trauma sits, we have an inhibition of choice. So we don't feel like we have a choice to say no. We don't have a choice to step away. We don't have a choice to not caretake, to not people please. And I feel like the best thing that we can do in working with, whether it's our own codependency or others, is to invite choice onto the table. Because once we begin to feel like we have choices, we have a little bit more flexibility in the way that we navigate the relational container, not only with relationship with self, but relationship with other too. So starting with a firm foundation, as I said from the beginning, if this has been caused by a relational rupture, it requires relational healing. So don't think that by the end of this podcast that you're going to just be the master of codependency. But if you can't, what I would love for you to take away from this podcast is that the importance of understanding where you sit on this archetypal spectrum. Perhaps maybe it's activated an experience for you that you're like, oh, that makes sense. So when you realize that the work that you do on yourself to recreate boundaries and create more ego strength in your life, I've done a few podcasts on that, so you can go back and check those out. But what that does for you is you start to view yourself as a lifelong learner that can always improve on your ability to be strong and confident in increasingly triggering situations. So what saying no was in the past might be may not be as activating as you work on your boundaries and your ego strength. You also have the ability to tolerate discomfort, and you're able to regulate your emotions without letting them completely overwhelm you. Have a noticing about your emotional experiences. You approach life with curiosity and readiness to explore and to master what strengthens you, and that increases your ability to find new creative ways to cope with challenging situations. You treat yourself and others as if they have the inner resources to deal with challenges. Oftentimes with codependency, we're so incredibly fragile with our own challenges that we project that onto others, and we don't believe that they have the inner strength to deal with their challenges. And so once we create boundaries between self and other, we give others the space to deal with their own challenges. We allow their inner hero to help them through their challenges. This allows you to not take what others say or do personally, and you regard yourself and other people as imperfect. And this gives yourself and others the ability to take ownership for solving problems as you need to and as they need to. And what all of those things does is it helps embody a sense of confidence in yourself. And that's the thing that is the core wound of the codependent, especially if it was ruptured in childhood. It's like there was no mirroring to your sense of self, your authentic sense of self. And so you're not going to have a sense of confidence in your authentic self. And so what ego strength and boundaries do is help you foster that over time. So the thing about codependency that I really just want to end on is it's useful to keep in mind that individuals who struggle with codependency aren't just, you know, problems to fix. Oftentimes these people are very highly sensitive and caring individuals who have had a ton of practice in service and deep listening. And it is with the creation of structure and boundaries and nurturing of sense of self that these people can be very, very amazing in being mirrors to others in therapeutic containers and professions, and really can be very, very deeply important in perpetuating healing in the world. But if these individuals do not become aware of the shadow states of codependency, they can often stay in that disempowered space and project their power outside of themselves, and that leaves them and others in this very enmeshed and manipulative power struggle. So I hope that this was enlightening for some of you. I've heard from people on Instagram that they've had to listen to these podcasts a few times to really absorb and take in the information. So if that's the case, I hope that you press play again, rewind and press play again to really absorb. But if you have any questions about this content or any of the work that I do in the world, I will put my links in the show notes and you can hit me up there. So codependency is definitely something that I discuss thoroughly in detail in my Born to Heal course. Not necessarily sections on codependency, but the whole course is really lined up to remove yourself from that disempowered child state and be able to heal from the inside out and have enough ego stability, strength, and boundaries so that you can show up in a very grounded and healthy, integrated way for yourself and for others. And so my next August cohort of Born to Heal will be launching very soon, but if you want to get on the wait list for that, the early bird wait list, I will put that link also in the show notes, and we will talk on Sunday. Bye guys. We'll be right back.